Team working is, I mean, it's such a dopamine release. When there is synergy that works, anything is possible.
Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%. A weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women. For episode 74, we are joined by Los Angeles-based publicist and communications specialist, Anita Yardeman. Passionate, creative, and a grafter, I have to mention straight out the gate that Anita has many talents and skills that fall under her official role, these being, but not limited to, strategist, brand manager, media and VIP relations specialist, event producer, and journalist. Prior to Anita completing a double major in communication and fashion marketing, she interned for Gucci, and while studying, simultaneously interned for the iconic fashion brand, and I'm a bit jealous of this one, Tom Ford, in the capacity of VIP relations assistant. On graduating, she worked PR for a number of high-end watch brands, West Time, Richard Mille, Audemars Piguet, and Hublot, all the meanwhile developing her own brand, Underlux, the intersection between luxury and the underground. It is here she pools and shares her talent, her mission, to inspire, collaborate, and educate. To select a handful of her work to shout about has been difficult, because you're spoilt for choice. I have chosen only to name a few from a huge list of big projects and accolades. She managed event production, the sponsorship activation and public media strategy for Jay-Z's Roc Nation's pre-Grammy brunch at Sonny and Cher's former Bel Air Estate. She was responsible for event production, VIP relations and product placement for Arnold Schwarzenegger's charity night. Hosted in his LA home, it included poker, art and smoking of cigars. And she has dressed talents such as Kylie Jenner for the cover of GQ, Jackie Collins for Porter Magazine and Jeremy Piven for Hot Time. And with her journalist hat on, Anita has written articles, reviews, and carried out interviews for Undercover LA, Magnetic Magazine, and Beirut-based Project Revolver. Anita, I know this has been a whirlwind tour of all the incredible things you do and have achieved, but I'm keen to hear from you, so I'll stop here and say it is with great pleasure to welcome you to Greater Than 11%.
Renee, thank you so much for such a lovely introduction. That was quite very sweet of you. Thank you for that.
Well, it's everything you've achieved, so I've just collated it.
When someone reads it back to you in that context, it's always, you know, you always reflect differently. So that was quite sweet. Thank you very much.
Yeah, my pleasure. So before we jump into the interview, I'm keen to know, one, what it's like in LA at the moment and how you guys are coping with the quarantine.
It's quiet. LA has never seen LA like this before. It's very warm. We're about to get a heat wave this weekend and we're all cooped up indoors and staying sane. We don't feel it because we're not on the streets, but we're finally seeing some clear weather here.
Yeah, it's definitely a strange time, especially here in the UK. I'm based just outside London and the weather is gorgeous, like blue skies, early 20s centigrade, that is. Yeah. It's so quiet, unbelievably quiet.
Definitely.
Right, so let's dive in. And I'm wondering if we can start with you talking through your role as a publicist and communications specialist.
Absolutely. In general, it's my responsibility to engage with the public. And the public means anyone from media to local communities, organizations, individuals, and to really serve as the voice and representative for that brand or for that client. Typically, I'm a roadmap for the decisions they make ahead. These days, brands are looked towards to as a religion. What decisions are they making? Who are they working with? What advertisements are they putting out? And it's really important for that brand to build a culture and to engage on a positive note. And if something doesn't happen that's positive, it's also my duty to clean that up and re-strategize the roadmap that they were taking. And in a nutshell, it's constantly keeping that brand or that client alive through all the partner efforts, sponsorships, understanding how they align within industries, and from there, building their story and adding content to their brand.
Story is so interesting, isn't it? Because brands really do need to focus on story, because that's kind of how we are kind of in dialogue with them. So all the kind of elements that are circulating within your skill set when you're working with big brands, it is ultimately to tell that story.
Story is important. Story is key. Ultimately, everyone is always telling a story. And that could be through visual communication, through literally writing efforts. One of the best examples of this could be when J.Lo walked down Versace's fashion show. It was a showstopper, and it told a story of nostalgia. It told a story of pop culture. It told a story of how Versace as a brand resonates so strongly within not just fashion, but luxury, and they know how to tell their story.
I mentioned, which feeds into this nicely, I mentioned in the intro all the different roles that you're juggling and managing at any one time. So strategist, brand manager, journalist, storyteller, managing media relations. So how does this all come together in under this umbrella communication specialist?
Well, in PR, there's a lot of writing involved. That's what you're ultimately doing all day. And I wanted to take my writing to the next level in a creative way, and journalism was my outlet. Because I attend so many events, both as leisure or as a guest, I like to be involved more than just an attendee. I like to be an observer, and I like to express what I'm observing. And the only way I could do that freely is through journalism for me. My network exposes me to these opportunities, and my network is built off of my PR work. So ultimately, it may seem like it's a lot of hats, but they're all integrated under one. And I cross between all of them.
Yeah, you can really see that on your site under Lux. I have to say, I really enjoyed your writing. Like, I can tell that you enjoy writing, and there's nothing better to read copy that you can feel that someone loves words, they're really interested and curious of other people or things that are going on. And I really, really enjoyed that element.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it feels like it's almost like catching a break when you can sit down and put the pen to paper within your own mindset, because there's no client or anybody else's voice that you want to try to obtain but your own.
I kind of touched lightly upon in the intro kind of your career, but there's a lot of it I didn't cover. So I'm wondering if you can tell me kind of how you came to this role and kind of what drew you to it and kind of, you know, where your journey's taken you up until now.
I always knew I loved fashion, and I always knew that I loved visually stimulating things, whether that was interior or old movies. But I knew that I wasn't going to be a filmmaker or a designer. I didn't have that in me. But because I love talking about the things that I love, it felt very natural for me to take the PR route. I started studying psychology when I was in college, my first college, and I wanted to get into the mind. But communication is just as much as getting into the mind as psychology is. Mm-hmm. And some really brilliant marketing gurus study psychology. So for me, it was a natural fit. I knew what I wanted to do quite young, and I took off from there. And so I, like you mentioned, I started interning at Gucci. And then after that, I just interned everywhere. I interned at agencies, which gave me an agency introspect, and I saw how agencies functioned. Also went in-house and saw how in-house was functioning. And I never had a love for one or more than the other, but I knew that I wanted to be in the business of storytelling. And I was able to capture that in any direction I took, whether it was in-house or for an agency or as an independent specialist. So that's what I stuck to, and I ran with it. I interned. Interning is key.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely is that notion of what you were kind of talking about before, is like building a network. It kind of happens at that starting point of when you start getting your foot in the industry. It's funny how those contacts feed or are connected at a later point?
Absolutely. When I started from my internships when I was super young, 15, 16, 17, those are still people within my network. Those are still people that are within my reach. And that's the important thing about interning. It piggybacks off both the company and you as an intern, that you both need each other. And from there, it's just keeping the wheels turning to see what works for you and what doesn't. You're shopping just as much as the employer is shopping.
That's a really salient point, especially for those that are thinking about getting into a creative career. It's always the connections that you make early on that kind of come back and kind of, you know, connect you in other ways.
Definitely.
So I mentioned some pretty big events that you produced for some celebrities. So I'm wondering if you could talk me through a process of what it's like when working on a brief for a VIP event.
The most important, and this is used across all boards, is to gather as much information as I possibly can to see what's happening in the industry, and then from there analyzing. The most important part is to listen to what the client wants. It's challenging when you have somebody like Jay-Z. However, the quote unquote easy part about it is that they have a formula. They're not emerging, they're established. And so they know their vision and they communicate that very clearly to you. So that takes away half your job. But now the most important part comes, well, how do I keep up with that creativity? How do I blow this one out bigger than the other? Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you don't outdo yourself, but you really listen to what's happening in the industry and what the client wants. And then from there is when you start to introduce progressive ideas, conservative ideas. But in the beginning, it's constantly listening, assessing, and staying in line with what the client wants. You named Schwarzenegger as an example. He's also very specific. We held this event at his home, literally in his backyard. So automatically the walls go up, the security goes up, and you have certain perimeters that you must work around. And from there, it's process of elimination. I can't do this. I can't do that. What can I do? And what do I know that has worked with him in the past? Studying the client and studying the industry, whether it's event planning or a brief for writing a biography, that's always going to be the number one and what you come back to during the briefing process.
So yeah, a lot of gathering of information, which must be quite fun as well, I guess, when you're really doing a deep dive on someone, it's like you get to know them.
Totally. And it's education for you, because no matter what, you have to stay on top of what's happening out there in the world in any given industry. So when you're diving into a brief, you studying while you're producing work, while you're producing context to present.
I guess working with a lot of big brands and names is quite a lot of pressure, especially like you're saying, if they've kind of set out and they've got a very clear vision of who they are and what their brand is. And I suspect you probably come across quite a big ego from time to time. So how do you contend and manage with this pressure, like you said, of trying to make sure you blow it out the park, and also maybe the demands of someone who maybe has forgotten how to be polite from time to time?
Oh, yeah. And in a service-based industry, such as PR or events, you will get that. There's no perfect world. There's no perfect synergy. There will be conflict. And experience has taught me not to fight against conflict, but to embrace it as a part of collaboration. And you only have focus on yourself. As long as you have control over your reaction and you are empathetic towards this person that wants to communicate something so strongly that doesn't resonate within your own language, to take a couple of deep breaths, understand what's happening, and address the situation in a way where everybody can come back together in one lane. Coming from a male-dominated industry, I was in menswear when I was at Tom Ford. When I'm in the watch industry, it's male-driven. So I've constantly around powerful men, which has really helped me gauge handling of egos. But it's a lot of practice. It's a lot of finessing my communication strategies and building habits around that on how to control egos and conflicts. They're not going away. So it's up to me how to handle that. And it's a work in progress. It's constantly being finessed. I'm constantly having to build a habit of how to approach it next. It's challenging, but it's definitely a skill set that constantly evolved as my experience grows.
I am not a fan of conflict. The way that you just broke that down and approach it just seems very emotionally resilient as well, like thinking about the other person and their needs in the context of not taking things personally.
Yeah, and it's so much easier said than done, not taking things personally. I mean, you could say that out loud 100 times, but if you're not practicing that, it just gets lost into ether. As long as you gain a control of that, conflict can turn into collaboration, and then that's when you could see things a little bit differently.
I love that. You've definitely sparked something in me. I love that conflict can help or facilitate collaboration. That's amazing. So also, I mentioned, like, in terms of the pressure of working on these jobs, how do you manage that? Because there is a lot of pressure in terms of, like you said, blowing out of the park, or, you know, just making sure that the client's happy and they have big expectations because their brand is very public and on a very big platform. So how do you manage that pressure?
It sounds really simple, but quite honestly, this is the way that I operate. I don't look at pressure as pressure. I don't look at stress as stress. If for every email that I've received that says urgent and I've jumped out of my seat, the ratio is it's completely off. Everything is urgent all the time. Everything is being inspected under a microscope. That's the reality of it. And I just look at it as what I have to do. I'm adaptable in certain high pressure situations, not irrationally, but if I look at it as pressure, then I overwhelm myself. Overwhelming gets me to underproducing. So I just don't look at things as pressure. I mean, everything is under pressure.
Is that something you think's in your personality or in your makeup that you kind of learned that growing up? Or do you think that's something that you have evolved stepping into the role that you're in now?
I think it's innate because I've never really had a problem with looking at something as stress. We all have stress. That's like saying we all breathe. No matter what, whether it's subconscious or consciously, stress is occurring in our everyday lives. But if I focus on stress, if I focus on pressure, then I'm taking away my focus on the things that I can excel at. You can't excel at stress. You can't excel at pressure. You just find ways of performing under those circumstances. I'm sure subconsciously, given the positions that I've been in, have finessed that innate capability. I think it's definitely something that I've had for as long as I could remember.
Yeah, I guess that's a really good take, is it's just focusing on it will impact you and then you'll start underperforming, which is so true because, you know, when we start feeling it, that's when we can't get out of that cycle of thinking of it.
Exactly. I think maybe just to reiterate what I meant about the urgent in the email, it's everybody wants everything now and you can't give everything now to everybody. That's not a reality. That's going to continue coming into your airwaves, but it's ultimately up to you how you take it in and then redistribute it. Mm-hmm. Or else you could get, like you said, you'd get lost in that cycle and it just leads to nowhere. It leads to just negativity.
Yeah, and burnout, which is, you know, in the creative industries, you know, like comes up time and time again. So it's just making sure you manage it, looking after yourself, really.
Absolutely.
So can you tell me, I know things aren't normal, I do with air quotes at the moment, but what is kind of a typical working week for you? What does that look like? Or is there a typical working week?
Yeah, well, I said yes so enthusiastically. Any time of the day at any place that I am is just my laptop and I. That's as typical as it gets. I mean, I've been working with the luxury watch brand FP Journ. So my typical days lately have been catered a lot to the company, to that brand, which is a gorgeous, gorgeous watch brand. And then from there, I filter my time through in projects that I'm sprinkling in on that are in the works. I mean, there is really no typical week. Calls, lots of calls. What I usually try to do is do calls in one day. And I think that's kind of a tried and true rule of thumb for productivity, is scheduling calls in one day so you don't get interrupted from your work, and just me and my laptop.
So you're pretty self-sufficient, really. You can be working anywhere.
Yeah, and I think that similar, just to answer a question you didn't even ask, was I think that's also innate, is I'm self-sufficient and I'm disciplined enough to be able to do anything from anywhere, because I enjoy what I do. So I could just plop open and get in that zone.
So has the pandemic and obviously the changes to the way we're working impacted on you, or has it opened up new opportunities? Because I imagine brands are thinking and pivoting about how to tell their stories differently within the constraints of where we're at.
Both. I think what's been interesting is how I've seen myself craft my approach towards media. And no matter what communication, it's important to be empathetic, but even more so during this time. Even though an exciting product announcement might sound vain at this time, I also don't want to hold back from releasing that information. Because if anything, I like to bring that more to the surface, because it could serve as an escapism. It could break away from all this pandemic news. And I have to be mindful that media, their editorial calendars have changed. Their communication strategies have changed. Positions are being cut. So my contact or my editors at certain magazines might not even be there tomorrow, or they were already gone as of yesterday. So it's definitely changed my approach towards media, but I don't hold back. I just find to serve it in a way where it's an escape, and but still being very mindful. And also the work opportunities have, there's been a lot more opportunities because now everyone's trying to get creative. So they've turned to me to see what that approach could be. And it's been consistent work. I'm grateful for that.
You know, notwithstanding, obviously, it's been a huge change and obviously loss and financial and revenue issues for loads of people. But it's kind of exciting that people are coming to you and tapping your creativity on how to tell a story within this situation. Like that must feel, one, great that people have that confidence in you, and obviously you're very skilled, so that goes without saying, but also like an opportunity for you in terms of thinking in different ways.
Totally. And also in a way that's me blocking out reality of what's happening. It's so saddening, and I sometimes can't wrap my mind around what's happening because it's so bad, in one word. And every day is worse news as we proceed. I mean, for somebody such as myself, I'm only speaking for myself. It's my way of therapy, and it's my way of blocking out reality. It's up for conversation how healthy that is, but I've learned how to manage my sadness and my sadness for the world and my sadness for my surroundings and what's happening. Some people might turn to something else, and I just turn to more work and more stimulation in my mind. I mean, the number of books I've read during this pandemic is impressing me even. So that's how I'm handling the madness of the world.
Yeah. And look, we just need to be kind to ourselves, and the way we manage is the way we manage. Likewise, I like to be super busy, and I like to be juggling lots of different things. And I've been working pro bono for some smaller organizations to try and help them out, and, you know, my own work and my teaching and all that kind of stuff. And that's the way I manage it. And that's fine. You know, it works for me, and it sounds like it's working for you. So,
and I've sprinkled in physical exercise, and I feel like I've got the bare minimum in for that. So I'm written off.
You're doing better than me on that front. I have to say, I tend to run 3 to 4 times a week. And the last couple of weeks, I haven't run once. And I'm like, why is that? Why have I stopped running?
Granted, the weather over there, that's good that you get to get outdoors.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I am still walking, but yeah, it's kind of funny. So going back to your role in terms of like all your talents and the kind of multiple kind of roles that you're inhabiting, and I've mentioned all the kind of things that you're juggling. So I'm wondering, how do you manage switching gears from, say, writing an article to producing or managing an event?
Definitely writing an article is, it's more one-dimensional and depends on what that article entails of. If it's a new product launch, there are certain criteria that you have to meet, and releasing the news and talking to media about it and taking that approach. And hosting an event is a much larger dynamic. It definitely involves a lot of working with teams and narrowing down an idea to fulfill the satisfaction of all parties involved. And it's more execution based. So writing an article, there's a certain template of steps that you have to follow, but hosting an event is much more dynamic, and that's where the excitement comes in. It's more delegating, more execution, a lot more organization, staying on top of every moving part and being the voice and the anchor that holds it all together.
I was just thinking as you're talking that through, is that pulling together a team? And obviously you work with, like I mentioned, a lot of luxury brands or a lot of big names. So, you know, having reach or that network that you mentioned, being able to dip into that and tap that up in terms of creating bespoke teams for very unique and original events or different things that you're working on. How do you put together a team? What's that process?
It's been a process that I've been trying to structure. Just very recently, I started to let go. That's always been something that I've tried working on, never tried hard enough, because now I'm actually experiencing the let go process and instilling trust and also understanding people's strengths and bringing them in when it's time, not overloading. And team working is, I mean, it's such a dopamine release. When there is synergy that works, anything is possible. But also, if it doesn't work, can't let it upset you, have to move right along. And doesn't mean to lose faith in the team or the individual, but to reassess, maybe redelegate, and from there, re-strategize. It's definitely a work in process, but it goes back to network. It's making notes of who is good at what they're good at, and reaching out to those people and giving them an opportunity and allowing their skill set to shine under your leadership. And then from there, continuing to build that network of team building.
Which is a lovely crossover into my next question, which is that personal brand is like increasingly important in terms of career and job prospects. So as a publicist skilled in promoting people's brands, business and personal, what are your top tips on developing your own personal brand?
I'm sure you've heard of this saying, people love to write, but they can't write about themselves, or they don't love to write about themselves. And so this is also something that I've been building as I've moved on. But the most important, and something that I've always done that doesn't require hard skills or anything of that sort, is I always find ways of staying in people's orbits. We communicate with many people on a daily basis, and it's easy to forget people and conversations, and having a network is very important, but nurturing it is even more important. And I'll tell you about an example. When it was Christmas, New Year's time, and I was getting my email ready to send out to my email contacts a personalized New Year message, Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, sending my best for the new year, a new idea occurred to me, and that was handwritten cards. Well, I love customization, I love personalization, and I love gifting. So I took it next step even more, and I said, why don't I do a photo shoot editorial, something that I've done in the past, that's part of my job, and send out postcards, a postcard that can be in an art form, that could either be saved in the archives or put up on a pin board. I took this brave approach of making the photo shoot about me. I'm always behind the camera. I'm always the one that's moving the chess pieces around. But I worked with a photographer friend, gave him this opportunity, and another creative director friend was on set with us, and I smiled for the camera. Then from there, I sent these cards, these personal cards, and the satisfaction of being able to be in someone's hands and reminding them that I appreciate them, they mean enough to me that I'm sending them this card. And then when I walk into a friend's kitchen, I'm on their kitchen, and it sounds vain and it sounds almost egoistic, but it's more like I'm giving them a hug at all times and letting them know that they're important to me. Those are the ways that I build my personal brand.
I love that. It doesn't sound vain at all, because I also like that it's collaboration, that you, like you said, you've kind of worked with a creative director, you've got a photographer involved. It's not just a selfie that you've printed out.
Oh, gosh, no.
You know, you've put a lot of thought and care into it. And I love stuff like that. As someone who sticks up things, one, I love post. I still send handwritten letters to friends. But, you know, I love getting things like that. And, you know, my fridge is covered in anything that anyone sends me. I mean, it's true. It's such a lovely thing to have, of people that, one, you like, you've worked with, or, you know, you love.
Definitely.
Okay. So I know I've said it a million times, but you have like such a multifaceted creative career. Rather than covering kind of all elements, I wonder if we focus on that publicist and comms specialist elements. What skills would you say are essential for these roles?
Definitely strategy and out-of-box thinking, because just the foundational elements like writing and talking, which are absolutely key, being able to put two and two together, even if the puzzle piece doesn't fit, is really important. The more you write, the more you talk, the more people you know leads you to that out-of-the-box thinking. Also narrowing down that out-of-box thinking, because even though it's out-of-box, you still have to present it in a way where it doesn't sound crazy. And there is no idea that's crazy. It's always in the presentation of how you bring an idea forward. But if you're just there to serve as a cookie cutter publicist, and I could write this press release, I could fill your website with content, it'll work for somebody who's looking for that. But to create stamina and momentum and excitement, strategy is key.
Is there anything else that you would think of if someone was aspiring to be a publicist? What were the steps that you would recommend they take?
Everyone is their own PR. The way you dress, the way you talk, the decisions you make. For very entry-level advice, I would say don't wait for job boards. Actually, don't even look at the job boards. Reference them so you see what's happening in the market, but approach your future job like you would approach a media pitch. Approach them, PR yourself, why you'd make a good fit, and don't be shy. You have nothing to lose. Start from somewhere and give your email, give your pitch to someone you trust, and search for constructive criticism. If your pitch isn't working, if your approach isn't working, rewrite it. It's always quality, not quantity. So also don't make it sound so mundane either. You really have to be excited and show that excitement and start interning everywhere. That's the key. Because as I mentioned earlier, you're shopping for them just as much as they're shopping for you. And the sooner you get down process of elimination, the sooner you're on the path of knowing what you want rather than what you don't want.
That is awesome advice. What's been one of the biggest challenges you've faced in your career?
Definitely, they've always been internal. Going back about the ego and handling the ego and handling very high influential individuals is how to handle ego. Even though I've been in a male-dominated industries, PR in general is females. They're all females. And just now we're embracing women support women. But I've witnessed a lot of hostile environments and with women versus women. And it's not okay. the PR industry does have this reputation. It's really quite awful, but that doesn't mean that every PR is this way, of course. Just like, you know, when you hear something about one person, it doesn't represent on a whole. But definitely navigating through really toxic environments has been a challenge. But the skill that I've gained from that is detecting it early on and stepping away.
I'm just in awe of how reflective you are, because I can imagine it is difficult regardless, you know, of gender. Like, the industry that you're in is, you know, a lot of egos, a lot of pressure, a lot of visibility. So yeah, I love that you speak with such calmness about that challenge.
Thanks.
So look, you know, you just have to go on Underlux's website to see how much you love your job and how brilliant you are at it. But I'm wondering if you can tell me what you love about what you do.
I love people. I think that it always narrows down to that. I'm fascinated by people. I am fascinated with how people produce, create, and that's what fuels me in every aspect. It really does.
And how do you then fuel your own creativity? What do you do? Where do you go?
I wish I had a more exciting answer to this. I read a lot and I go dancing to release all of this pressure, so to say. And I listen to music. I started writing in a journal to reflect and see where I could funnel that creativity. But I really do some basic things just to keep going.
Well, they're pretty exciting. I mean, dancing for one, I mean, you know,
dancing, and it's definitely key.
The thing is, I mean, I always find like reading, and I mean this like in the best sense, is such a luxury, because, you know, our time gets thinner and thinner, I think, with the pace of the world. Obviously now it is not in that current rhythm. But yeah, reading a book is exciting because it means you've made space and time to do it. That's what I love about reading.
Definitely. It's definitely something I've embraced lately more than I have before.
So look, we're coming to the end of the interview. It's been so fabulous to connect with you and do our first remote podcast with an LA-based publicist. It's been incredible. What's coming up for you? You mentioned you have got a lot of work at the moment. So I'm wondering what's on the kind of table for the next couple of months.
Just keeping up with what's happening. That might sound a little generic, but every day has been a new day in the last 2 months. So there's always a light at the end of the tunnel, but the vision is a little bit blurry right now because things are changing quite rapidly. So I'll still continue to be creating in my own ways. That won't change. But as far as what's coming up, that's up for grabs.
Yeah. I think we're all feeling that for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So look, two questions before we end that I ask everyone. Firstly, is there a career job in the creative industries that you know little about? And then potentially I could get someone in that role on the podcast and we can dissect that role and how it works. And secondly, a woman that you would recommend I get in contact so that I can get on to Greater Than 11% and interview her.
A career in the creative industry. Virtual reality, AI, anything that has to do with robots, but on the creative side. To have a robot, you have to design the robot. So I don't know the hierarchy in that, not the technology behind it, but more about the design element behind it. And who is a woman in the creative industry that I would like to hear is, I have a great friend. Her name is Britt Heisen, and she is the founder and editor-in-chief of Millennial Magazine. She's insightful. She is my go-to to call, and we have a great relationship. She's a strong woman, and I definitely would suggest her.
Oh, awesome. I'll definitely reach out. I would love to have her. Anita, thank you so much for your time, sharing what you do and how you do it with us. It's been so lovely to catch up.
Thank you so much, Renee. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review and rate, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. Also, stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases.